Now we're going to Tony Gosling from Bristol, England.
Hello.
This is George Butler. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine, George. Yeah, how are you, mate?
Okay, how's it been going on? All right?
Oh, gosh. Always stuff going on down here, yeah. I mean, we've had, you know, our take on the Nelson Mandela death is pretty devastating.
Oh, man.
Because I don't know if you know, but David Cameron made a trip to South Africa just a couple of years before he was released. Well, just a year before, actually.
Okay.
And was doing deals to make basically because the South Africans had nuclear weapons. And the Tory party decided to send a young David Cameron down there to do a deal with the white South African apartheid regime with their nuclear weapons, so that when the ANC came to power, the nuclear weapons had disappeared. So we were going into that yesterday in quite an amount of depth, as also, you know, all sorts of stuff as well, really. I mean, we've got amazing student riots in London. Well, I say riots caused by the police, because they're closing down student unions right across Britain.
Basically, what are they doing? They're
closing down student unions.
Really?
Now, that means that there won't be any funding for these student unions. The buildings will be taken over by the university and used for whatever the university wants. In London, I've been chatting to some of the student representatives, and they're saying basically they're criminalising dissent in the universities, because these universities are becoming commercial organisations. And the commercial organisations don't want any bad press or any kind of dissent from the leadership of the organisation. It's like a business, you know. If people start to, you know, downgrade the image of the business, then they're sacked. Well, it's the same as going on with student dissent. Anyway, they've had a big protest called Cops Off Campus over the week, and the police closed that down and arrested people as well. So there's quite a lot going on over here. Now, you know, I don't know if you remember back in 2010, the election year, but as soon as the coalition government came in, there were massive student protests on the streets of London. I mean, we're talking about nearly 100,000 students from all over the country came to London. And what's the Cameron government's really afraid of is that they're going to try and do this again, which is why they're being so heavy-handed with the students in London, arresting something like 50, 60 students just last week. I mean, these are all the main student organisers in the editor of the London University student magazine was arrested, you know, various people.
Well, it sounds like substantial people are coming in behind these movements, these activist movements.
Sorry?
Very substantial people are beginning to come behind these activist groups.
Well, they're coming in to take them out. They're trying to. The government are trying to. The Metropolitan Police are trying to. The thing is that what's happening in London is being looked at right around the country with the students, because there are something like 8 occupations going on right now in different universities, university buildings, by students, you know, saying, no, we're not going to have our union closed down. And there are legal challenges, there's injunctions going out saying that students are not allowed on university premises, some students, they can name a student and that student is not allowed onto the premises of the university, just without any giving any reason or whatever, but these injunctions have been granted by the courts. So it's, you know, there is a serious attempt to actually smash any kind of student dissent. And what I have been saying basically is decapitate student movement in Britain. I mean, really, if you talk to any of these people, they are young, you know, sort of young philosophy students and people like that. They are both in equal measures frightened and really angry, because, you know, this is, we're entering a quite an important moment in British history with what's happening with the student movement being very much looked at in the run-up to the next general election, because the students could bring down the government now. I mean, you know, if they decide that they've had enough of this and they really get organised and get together. You know, you could even go back to the 2010 and say that the scenes of hundreds of thousands of students on the streets of London was one of the things that sparked the Arab Spring. I mean, I've heard people say that, you know, that a lot of people in Africa, South Africa, North African Mediterranean countries, looked at what was going on in London and thought, "Why God, if they can do that, so can we."
Well, I tell you, things are really, really popping over there, aren't they?
The rise of Germany.
Oh, the rise of Germany, yeah.
The Germans are I mean, they're being pretty, I mean, I don't know if you remember, but last year we had the sacking of the head of the German Secret Service for aiding the far right, Heinz Fromm. And it does seem that we've got a Secret Service, I mean, well, Amnesty have come out with a report saying the German Secret Service are heavily involved in targeting the drone killings in Afghanistan, this kind of thing. So the rise of Germany, I mean, both economically and militarily. Hi, George. Thanks for getting in touch with me again.
Boy, I tell you what, we talked a little bit earlier about the student. What are they doing? Are they stifling the student activist groups over there in England right now?
Right through this week, there's been a lot of action in London with the police and the University of London Union, that's the ULU, everyone calls it, student union, because what's happening is, due to this privatisation of our universities, I mean, that whole process was started when the coalition government came in 2010 with a big increase in tuition fees, so that the state was no longer funding this education at all. The individuals were, you know, young people going in through university were having to fund themselves, and basically, obviously, they're starting off with little or no money, so having to go into massive amounts of debt. We've now got the situation where, in dollar terms, a couple finishing university have got a combined debt of something like $100,000 as they're just about to start their career. Obviously, they'd be in no situation to then at that point be able to buy somewhere to live or anything like that. I mean, we're being saddled with debt, massive debt, not only nationally, you know, with our governments right around the Eurozone, NATO zone, and the States as well, but individuals are starting their lives in massive amounts of debt, and I think that there's a deliberate attempt by the city and by their hedge funds, the big financial institutions, Goldman Sachs, people like that, the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers, to make sure that everybody that enters their working life from now on starts it with a massive amount of debt. And they're trying to just simply weigh people down with this debt burden in order to keep them obedient. But, I mean, you know, this is one of the reasons why there's been such a lot of upset in Britain by students, and they're starting to get very well organised. Way back in 2010, when the coalition government was first elected, there was a massive student protest in London with nearly 100,000 students converging on the Capitol, a massive rally, where there was actually, considering the number of people, very little violence. Conservative central office was occupied by hundreds of students, charged in through the front door and occupied the Tory central office. And, you know, the students were very, very well organised and making it very clear to the nation and actually to the world. I mean, this is one of the biggest demonstrations we've seen on the streets of London, certainly the biggest student demonstration for decades. And the word went out around the world, look, if the English students can do this, a lot of people in North Africa were looking across thinking, crikey, you know. And this is, a lot of people say this is one of the things that actually inspired and sparked possibly some aspects of the Arab Spring. But anyway, so the students are right now in a situation where the universities that they're working in are being basically contracted out to private businesses who are hiring cheap labour, people who are working in the universities, not so much the academic staff, more the administrative staff and the janitors, people like this, on very low wages and terrible paying conditions. And so the students who are also having funding removed for the student union process, which is, you know, the student union buildings where they have their own bar, their own cafe facilities, restaurant facilities, entertainment facilities run by the students, these are all being closed down right across the country. They're in process. The universities are taking these buildings over to run for their own benefit. And the idea of student activity, student organising, student democracy is being quietly strangled. Anyway, the students have been fighting back over the last few months, and this week it's come to a head with an occupation at the University of London Student Union, and there are something like six or seven other universities around the country where these occupations have been taking place, George, right from Edinburgh, Birmingham, Warwick University, Brighton, Sussex University in Brighton. A lot of these students are looking at London and what's been happening. Anyway, the police charged in on Wednesday into the University of London Union, mob-handed, punching, kicking, etc., and arrested a load of students, basically dragged them out of the university occupation, which actually was a perfectly legal occupation. The interesting thing is that there is actually no legal right for the police to evict these people. It looks as if the whole eviction was done illegally by the police and the university authorities, with the university authorities saying, you know, we want these people out, and the police simply doing it without any glance at what the law is. And so the students for several weeks have had an organised rally in Euston in central London for Thursday, which took place just after lunchtime. And this rally was in, you know, a very, very public place. The idea is it's just a peaceful protest, but we're making our voice heard. And the protest was called Cops Off Campus, because they're just fed up with the police arriving mob-handed and arresting people, dragging people through corridors, etc., in our universities in Britain. And what happened there was something like 100 or so riot police charged into the peaceful demonstration, knocked one disabled student to the ground, kicking his crutches out from underneath him, where he was left bleeding, abandoned by the police, and really very violent protest. Something like 40 students were arrested, including the editor of the University of London Student Union magazine. And ULU students are all angry and then getting organised. But the attempt here is really to stop anything like the 2010 student protests happening across the country and in central London, and stopping the students organising, basically. I spoke to one philosophy student. She said that what's happened over the last week is they've made it very clear to us that there will be no dissent by students in Britain anymore. And as soon as they start dissenting from the view of the university board, they will be removed from the university, banned from the university. Injunctions have been served and granted by the courts, so that the universities now can arbitrarily, without giving any reasons, simply ban any individual student anywhere from the premises of the University of London, for example. So this is the way things are going. There's a very concerted attempt to entirely decapitate the student movements in Britain, and particularly at the University of London, where everyone's watching to see how all this goes. Now, whether this is going to be successful, I very much doubt. I think students are very resourceful, these young people, and also very angry, not only with the complete failure of economic illiteracy of the government and their failure of their economic policies, but also by their authoritarian, heavy-handed tactics, the like of which we might be much more likely to see in somewhere like China, you know, where David Cameron has spent most of the week doing dodgy trade deals with these authoritarian Chinese who just seems despise democracy as much as Cameron does.
Right. You know, what about the rise of Germany? Have y'all been looking at that over there?
Yeah, well, certainly.
What's happening?
The Germans, I mean, everyone knows, the Germans are the economic powerhouse of the NATO countries right now.
They're providing
most of the cars for us these days, if you haven't noticed. Over the last 20, 30 years, you know, US car manufacturers, British car manufacturers, even the French to a certain extent, lesser, but, you know, the main allied powers of World War II, you know, the industrial heritage, the industrial heartland has been ripped out over the last 20, 30 years. But Germany's doing extremely well financially and in the manufacturing sectors. Things like unemployment is very low in Germany, housing conditions much better, government spending much better, everything running very, very smoothly and efficiently over there. But the interesting thing is last year we had the announcement that German troops were going to be active in other parts of the world, and they've been very active. In fact, Amnesty International just gave out a report about 3 weeks ago saying that the German intelligence services were some of the worst for supplying information to those in control of the drones. That is largely, I mean, the three main drone powers, of course, are Britain, America, and Israel. But this is the NATO countries, that's Britain and America, in Afghanistan. So the Germans have been very active supplying information which is targeting, used for drone targeting. Now, these drone targets are hitting lots and lots and killing lots of civilians. They're illegal under international law, so anyone who's actually involved in those operations is certainly, you know, likely to be tried in the International Criminal Court in The Hague. The Germans have also been involved in a big initiative which is going on in the European Union to do with the European Army. They're trying to get a European Army together, and it's the Germans driving this. But going back to the drones for a moment, we had a big announcement at the beginning of November that the Germans were pulling out of the drone program, saying that they wanted nothing to do with, I think it's the Reaper drone, American drone. But actually what's happening is they've gone into another agreement with other European countries. I think it's seven different European countries, and the Germans leading a massive new drone program. So what we're hearing trumpeted on our TV screens is the Germans are pulling out. But actually, if you read some of the defense press, you'll find that actually the Germans are leading a new drone program. Now, I mean, for me, I don't know what your thoughts are, George, but really the drones are the cutting edge of the arms race and violations of human rights. And it's really good to see that the Russians under Putin have actually distanced themselves
to take
it.
Out anyone. They're using no drones. They can take out anyone.
The interesting thing is that Putin and the Russians have distanced themselves from any use of drones. Now, I imagine that the Russians will use them for surveillance, but they're saying that they will not, and there certainly isn't evidence that they've ever been used by the Russians for these so-called targeted killings, which are basically used to assassinate people and just randomly kill people. Now, I think those involved in this drone program will end up in The Hague, ultimately, because these kinds of extrajudicial killings are criminal offences, especially in places like Pakistan where there is no real evidence of anyone being a threat. You know, if someone is a threat, what you do is you go through the proper channels, arrest the person, and then there's a chance for them to explain why they're there. You know, if someone's had a wedding.
Yeah, due process of some kind, you know.
Yeah, there are literally thousands of people being killed by these drones, and most of them are totally innocent. There may be one or two actual real suspects, but basically the idea is that people can be killed anywhere in the world by remote control,
yes,
and no one will even know who's done the killing. Well,
that's
the fact of the matter
exactly.
is, of course, a lot of people do know who's been doing this killing,
sure.
and those are the people who will ultimately, you know, pay the price through the international legal system.
I've got a question on the Ukraine. Is the leadership trying to take it back into a more closer relationship with the Soviets? What's happening in the Ukraine?
Well, Ukraine is the biggest country in Europe. I was just looking at the statistics.
Yeah.
Not the most populous, but it is actually an enormous country.
It's the largest.
Bigger than Germany,
size,
bigger than
yeah.
France.
Yes, it is.
And it's sort of sandwiched in between these two power blocks, the EU, what I would call United States of Europa, and it's sandwiched between there and Russia. And it's interesting the different demographics of who's, I mean, it's been pulled in both directions. There's a lot of pressure on Ukraine from the EU to join them. There's also pressure from the Russians for the Ukraine to join with Russia.
Yes.
The fact of the matter is, it's probably going to be a lot better for Ukrainian people if they play a game between the two. They say, well, actually, what we want is our independence, and we want friendly relations with both sides.
Exactly.
Because by attempting to sign up, as they have been, Viktor Yanukovych has been, with the European Union, and then backing off, because what's happening, obviously, is the Russians are saying, look, if you're going to sign up with the European Union, if you're going to become part of that, then we are going to cut off your gas supplies, or at least cheap gas supplies for you, and you're going to have to deal with a hostile Russia, because these people are our enemies. They're putting the missile shield in European Union countries, which is quite clearly aimed at us, which is we don't like. So, you know, the best thing for the Ukrainians, torn between the two sides, I think, is to just be really sensible and strong about having their own independence and saying, well, actually, we don't want to be part of either of these two big power blocks. Somewhat like Finland was, you know, in the run-up to the Second World
exactly,
War.
Exactly, exactly.
Saying, well, actually, we don't really want to be involved in this. Ultimately, they probably will have to get involved, but at least they will have the time to decide in their own time whether they align themselves with the European Union or whether they align themselves with the Russian side.
Well, they have a very large army also.
They also do. A lot of the army, of course, are younger people.
Yeah.
Now, the young people in Ukraine tend to favour the, really through, I suppose, cultural propaganda, favour the EU way of doing things. You know, sure. Europe is this kind of young organisation. It's also very good at selling itself, marketing itself, as we saw in the old Orange Revolution back in 2004. But the older people are all much more, I think, got a wiser head on them. The older generations in their 40s, 50s, 60s are all generally, well, not all of them, but most of them are saying, well, actually, the Russia is a much more stable future. Of course, they look over at the EU and say, well, the euro is a disaster. Do we really want to pay part of this disaster zone?
Right. The recent passing of Nelson Mandela, what are your thoughts and comments on that?
Well, amazing man. He was...
He did a lot for his people, didn't he? Huh?
He was a massive influence on the world. Of course, the fact that he inspired people in other parts of the world, particularly here in England and Britain generally, was important because we were the old colonial power. And certainly the vast majority of British people were very much against apartheid. I mean, in the old days, of course, before the mass media, we didn't really know what was going on in the colonies. And these Afrikaans, racist attitudes of people like the AWB in South Africa weren't really known much about here in England. And we just thought of South Africa as an exotic place which was far away. But Mandela made sure that we would recognize that there was a conflict over there, that the black Africans were not simply doing what they were told, that they wanted their right. All they were basically asking for was the right to vote. You know, one man, one vote. Simple asking. And also, it was, I think it was also Nelson Mandela's ability to forgive and also to make it clear
he wanted
a settlement, you know, which wasn't going to be against the white.
You make an important point. The Reconciliation Commission or Council, whatever they called it, that was unprecedented, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And it set a very great example, which
has
been used
best
in other
thing,
parts
I
of
think
the world.
I think that's one of the hallmarks of his rule over there, of his governing.
That's right. It was called the Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
Yeah, right.
And this was very, very useful in
defusing
Northern Ireland, for example.
Right,
the problem
to heal that violence and to, you know, cool it off, you know.
Right. And, it was clear from the start that Mandela's movement wanted an accommodation with the whites rather than a fight with the whites. And it was obviously a racial struggle. But there's also the fact that the pre-Mandela regime, white South African apartheid regime, had been dealing with the Israelis manufacturing nuclear weapons. They'd been doing it on the sly, secretly. And as the prospect of black majority rule came around the corner at the end of the 80s, beginning of the 90s, they were looking to quietly get rid of these nuclear weapons without making a big fuss. The United Nations and various atomic organizations knew they had them, and they were saying to them, well, what are you going to do with these nuclear weapons? Well, what the South African white regime said, that they had something like 10, I believe, that they'd manufactured along with the Israelis. And what they said is, oh, we'll destroy them. And they said to the United Nations, this is what we're doing, destroy. What in fact happened, it seems, was that David Cameron, a young little boy, he was in his 20s at the Conservative Central Office in London in the research department of the Tory party, made a trip over to South Africa in 1989, actually a sanctions-busting trip, because there were sanctions against South Africa, and he was campaigning against them and saying, well, we should just, business as usual with South Africa. Of course, the sanctions were one of the main reasons why black majority rule happened, and Cameron was, it seems, completely against the idea of sanctions as a young Tory, as Margaret Thatcher, his leader at the time, was. And he, it's alleged anyway, did a deal with the South African government, and he was there as a gopher, basically, to buy these nuclear weapons and then sell them on to the British government at a massive markup and take that money that he made from that deal and use it in Conservative Party funds to fight the 1992 general election. Now, this was all completely illegal, criminal offence, but it seems to get away with it. Anyway, one important person that went with him on that trip and possibly died as a result of the knowledge that he had of that deal, was none other than Dr. David Kelly. He was the British government scientist who died in 2003 in mysterious circumstances after saying that the dodgy dossier on Iraq had been sexed up. So whatever happened to those nuclear weapons, nobody really knows. It's quite feasible that the North Koreans' nuclear weapons were those exact self-same weapons. But it's very interesting that Cameron's trip at the time, was done all completely behind the back of the ANC. And there he is today saying what a wonderful man Nelson Mandela was whilst doing deals, illegal criminal nuclear deals with the apartheid regime behind Mandela's back.
Right. What's this creature, underwater creature in Bristol Harbor? there was a creature, they reported, they had some video on it. It was luminescent under the water. Did you hear about that? Or were
yes, George. Actually, that was some friends of mine just having some fun.
Was that a hoax?
They've done a radio-controlled submarine with a bit of fluorescent paint on it and some eyes.
Golly, man. That went worldwide, didn't it?
I know. Well, we like to have a bit of fun. It's a bit like the crop circles. You know, you can go out there with a grass cutting machine in the middle of the night, have a bit of fun, and then it's all over the newspapers, and they say there's aliens. You know, it's amazing what people will believe.
Is there anything else we need to know about that's important coming out of either?
Well, I just think, I want to reiterate the importance of what's happening with the students. The idea of completely closing down any kind of democracy amongst students, I don't think they're going to take very, very kindly to that at all. And in fact, students are already organizing against it. But it just so shows the contempt for democracy that this present coalition government with David Cameron in charge of it has. I don't think anybody really thinks that he has any fighting chance of winning the next election. He's a crash and burn prime minister. He's just going to crash and burn, make as much mess as he can for the City of London. The City of London will like it. But it's not democracy, George.
Yeah, rekindle our interest restate the 2010 student protest. What is that about, and what were
that
the results
of that?
That was
all about tuition fees. What happened was
a lot of
young people for the first time were able to vote over 18, so all can vote here. And so a lot of them, the young students, had been voting for the Liberal Democrats, who'd promised that they would bring down and get rid of tuition fees. So, so they voted for the bring down tuition fees. The Liberal Party did quite well. And what happened before the general election, actually back in late 2009, early 2010, the Liberal Democrat leader Nick Clegg had done a secret deal with David Cameron if they got into power to drop this demand. And so students were all basically betrayed by the Liberal Democrats. So they'd all voted for the Liberal Democrats, many of them had, and then been betrayed even before the election. So they'd been conned as a confidence trick. And so the students all got very well organized, and in November 2010, nearly 100,000 students converged on London for a massive, massive peaceful protest. I mean, there was a little bit of argy-bargy, but the most important thing, I suppose, that they did was to occupy the headquarters of the Conservative Party. I mean, they were obviously very annoyed with the Liberal
Democrats. They went into their headquarters, didn't they?
They went into the headquarters of the Conservative Party, filled the building up with hundreds of... They got hundreds of students into the headquarters of the Tory Party, and I don't know if they found anything on their computers. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
maybe
they
found some old
some
old files on David Cameron and his trip to South Africa. Who knows?
Well, there were students on top of the building. I remember now.
But that was all about tuition fees because this is all to do with whether the education is there for the individual provided by the state in order to contribute to society, or whether you're just a cog in a machine doing a vocational course and you're coming out of university saddled with so much debt you may never pay it off. The Chancellor announced this week in his autumn statement was that they're going to move that debt book away from the government and to these private, really ruthless firms. I mean, for example, if there's a student who still has a loan, they've only got a part-time job, they're not really able to pay the loan off, then you'll have these gangster-type characters coming around to the house and taking their cars off them, their sofas, any of their possessions off them. So that's just happened this last week. They're getting tough with people who have had student loans and not been able to pay them back. I mean, it seems almost like money is a religion. You know, debt is a religion, and that if you don't pay your debts, nothing else matters. There's all the morals are out of the window. You just simply have to. Even if you don't have any private property I mean, I get the impression that they would really like to just jail people and put them into forced labour, George, if they haven't got a job. And, of course, there are very, very few jobs here in Britain. They've got lots of jobs, more than ever, but they're all part-time jobs. There's not enough money to actually even pay the bills anymore with most jobs here in Britain.
Well, you know, there's a history of the poor laws way back. Are y'all going into a new version of the poor laws in England?
Well, we're going into a new Victorian era. I think it's time to dust off your Dickens novels from the shelf, George, and have a look at what life was like back in Victorian times, because that's where we're heading right now.
Yeah, it looks like that. Any other tidbits of
information? That's it, George. I would just like to plug my radio show, it's called Friday Drive Time, and it's online at www.thisweek.org.uk, and particularly the nuclear weapons story. You'll find all the links the show, which is the 6th of December 2013 show. You'll find all the links there. And also, I do a column on Russia Today. So if you go into Op Edge on the Russia RT website, you'll find some of my thoughts about the students there.
Okay, Tony, that's great. And thank you very much for your interview and your update from Bristol, England. Thank you,
Thanks, George. All the best, mate. God bless.
Okay, bye-bye.